Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy, my friend in hockey. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
So, Bruce, we're going to talk today about the proposition about the Edmonton Oilers needing a new coach, and here's my cat. And my argument today, Bruce, is the Oilers, it's time for a new coach with this team. And why don't we go through the arguments for that happening and the arguments against that, some of the common arguments that people are bringing up against that.
Sure.
So why don't we start off? I've written a blog post about it, and we can get into what I think, but I just want to hear what you're thinking right now. Because when we talked on the weekend, you thought of maybe if we lost to Vegas that you'd be open to a coaching change as well. Where are you right now, Bruce?
I was writing a post on Friday when the Spooner for Strome's trade came down. I was actually writing a post talking about some commentary coming from other places that McClellan might be on the hot seat. And I'm frankly starting to get on board with it. I mean, the case was made last spring. They could have done a full house cleaning. There was a compromise made. They kept McClellan. They changed the assistant coaches. Looked good for a brief part at the beginning of the year. But here we are in November again. And in November, it seems like the team goes into the tank. Well, it predates McClellan probably. But during his time here, this is an age-old problem. And, you know, you might say, well, it's the Oilers. Of course, they're in the tank. But worse in November than any other time. And they just run into it every year, same thing. And right now we're struggling through a difficult time. And honestly, I agree with that. At least it should be under heavy consideration. Like they should be having another red wine summit to discuss whether it's time for a move or what. By what time does what result need to happen in order for a move to be made or not be made?
To me, Bruce, it's actually a really kind of simple decision at this point. This is McDavid's fourth year. He's a generational superstar. I think that's clear. When you look at the history of these teams with generational superstars, they don't all make the playoffs early on. But by the fourth year, these teams are playoff teams. And these Oilers have now lost 6 of 7 games. They're getting outscored handily in these games. They've collapsed in the last 2 games. And I have no confidence that this coach is going to turn it around. He's out of answers, Bruce. He's going back to what he got him into the playoffs in 2016-17, which was McDavid and Draisaitl together. He tried it all last year. Didn't work. He's trying it again. They've lost 2 of 3 games since he's done it. This is his solution. This was his plan B. Plan B is not working. Didn't work last year. McClellan, in his last 4 years as a head coach, San Jose, 3 in Edmonton, he's made the playoffs once. So that was a pretty good San Jose team, Bruce. The next year, Peter DeBoer came in, took him to the Stanley Cup Finals. This is a team with Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and a number of support players of debatable quality. But it does have Connor McDavid, and it's trending not to make the playoffs for the 3 out of 4 years, and this is the fourth year. Let's see if someone else can take this roster. Take this current roster. Peter Chiarelli's been working on this roster. A lot of people, you know, there's a big debate who's most to blame, Chiarelli or McClellan. The answer's both. But this is the roster this year. Firing the GM may make sense, and I'm not arguing against that. But firing the GM's not going to change things this year in terms of making the playoffs. When you fire the GM, it hardly ever happens, but it doesn't turn the team around. Firing the coach sometimes can turn the team around. We are about to write off another season by December 1st. Before that happens, it is incumbent, I think, on the general manager and the team leadership to change coaches, to see if that's not part of the issue, to see if some other coach can't come in here and with this same roster turn things around. You've got to roll the dice on that. I think just as a practical matter of running an NHL team, that's one of the things you can do to maybe turn around a team. It hasn't been tried. McClellan's been given a chance. He's been given 4 chances. He's failed 3 times, including, and I'm including this year because it's heading on, it's heading, trending towards a failure. It's time to try something else. That's my argument.
One counter argument, of course, being that you can only fire the guy once. Once you've done it, it's done. They're committed to pay him, I think, something like $3 million a year for this year and next. They'd also have to pay whatever newcomer. I mean, the Dreamers, of course, are saying Joel Quenneville, but whoever. Or else you promote from within. I guess that's the other alternative, and maybe that's even the first choice. But that's a consideration. Do you still think that we have an ace coach that is just his team's in a rough patch, but he's the best available and we should just stick with him? I mean, that's the opposing question. But like I said, this is the headache time of year. You know, I'm just writing the segment review post for our games 11 to 20. And I look back at previous years, and every year it's the same thing. If they have a poor start, they have a poor second segment. If they have a good start, they have a poor second segment. And during McClellan's time in Edmonton, the Oilers in November have a 406 points percentage. This is in like a 560 league, right? So you're losing like major ground. The rest of the year, 533 under McClellan. So below average, the Oilers, even when you throw out the bad month, 508 overall, McClellan's coaching record here. And like I say, that's in a 560 league. So 508 is, you know, below the waterline. And I mean, part of that's on the roster that he's been given, but the coach's job is to make the most out of that roster. And I got to say, I saw a couple things on the weekend that left me pretty sore.
Yeah, people bring up the Calgary game where he puts Lucic. Ryan Rashad brought this up, who's been one of McClellan's biggest supporters, or, you know, he's like McClellan's work. Mm-hmm. That's how I would phrase that, to be fair. Mm-hmm. Rarely criticizes the coach, but he was criticizing the coach today on the radio, bringing up this Lucic thing on McDavid and Draisaitl's line. The fact that it made sense to do it a couple shifts in a violent game, but then a hockey game breaks out and you need to score some goals, and Lucic just killed that line off. McClellan did not adjust. Bruce, it was so maddening because, again, it brought together a couple things. The failed McDavid-Draisaitl combination, which doesn't fail because they're not good together. They are good together, but because it takes you go from having maybe two good lines to just have loading it up all in one line. And then McClellan's overplaying of veteran players, his vets and pets thing, and overplaying of Lucic all of last year, Letestu all of last year. Putting them in situations where they're unable to succeed because they don't have the skill level to succeed there. And Lucic just killed off that line with his play. But what would you expect? What else are you going to expect?
He's been doing it all year. I mean, all calendar 2018. And many would argue, going back before that, that his hands were turning to stone in front of us. And he has trouble just making and taking a routine pass now. And I mean, there were several times on Saturday that for whatever reason, the puck came out on the left wing side into the neutral zone. And one attempted pass later, puck would be going hard back into Edmonton territory. And there would be McDavid and Draisaitl at the far blue line, having to circle back and come back and try and retrieve the puck again. That was the first line. Now, we doubled our pleasure on Saturday, and on the second line, the coach went and brought up Zach Cassian to play with McDavid and Spooner in the third period. Now, this was the same coach who said Cooper Marody, after he played 3 minutes in the first period, he said there was too many penalties. He got out of the rotation. I couldn't risk putting him back in there. Meanwhile, Zach Cassian personally sat in the penalty box for basically the entire second period. And he came out and he was rewarded with a promotion to the second line, which had a horrible third period, allowing both the tying and winning goals. The line did. I'm not sure Cassian was on the ice for one of those goals, but he sure was for there was one where he and Spooner got all mixed up and nobody covered anybody. And that was the tying goal, I think. And I mean, I went on about Cassian in the podcast last night, so I'll just cut to the gist of it. He played over a full period of hockey this weekend. And during the time he was on the ice 5-on-5, the Oilers got outshot 14-0. Like they couldn't get one shot on net when Cassian was on the ice with a variety of line mates. Like
people say it's the roster, Bruce.
Explain that to me.
Yeah. People say it's the roster. You know, you got all these players you can't play with. Go with the kid line. You know, what if you tried? This is a skill game and it's a fast game. And the boy, did the Calgary Flames ever show that to the Oilers, how much speed and skill pays off. They just ran all over the Oilers slower lineup. Well, how about a fourth line of Cooper Marody, Tyler Benson, and Jesse Puljujärvi or Kyler Yamamoto, Bruce, or Cameron Hebig in the middle there? Go with the kid line. Guys who can skate and make plays as your fourth line. Are they going to get outshot 0-15 in a game?
Like, oh, they're not.
No, they're not. And we just seem to be – we have a GM who's behind the times who built a big, rough, slow team who missed the trend. We have a GM who missed the trend.
Yep.
And about a roster – but there, he also did bring in, you know, a lot of good young players. This – he, you know, in Shirelli's favor, and the one thing strongly in his favor is building, rebuilding the farm system. Mm-hmm. And yes, they have some young players that McClellan could go to right now. There's a lot of skill, and you're just putting them on the fourth line or the third line. You know, you're not going to be, they're not going to be in over their heads, but you call up Cooper Marody and you don't even play him. And who are you putting on the top line when you need a goal instead of Cooper Marody or someone who might be able to get a goal? Milan Lucic and then Zach Cassian on the second line. So Bruce, I want to go over a few more of the arguments with McClellan. Okay, there's been a number of skill players, Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, Justin Schultz, Jesse Puljujärvi, who haven't really fully clicked under McClellan's system and are now not on the team. Now, Puljujärvi is still in the organization. So, you know, people blame Shirelli for all of those players leaving. But you have, I think it's a fair question to ask, is how much is that on the coach not realizing the most out of these players? So there's no way that you move them. So there's no way you move Justin Schultz or Taylor Hall. You figure out a way to get Jesse Puljujärvi going. I think that is that in terms of deciding to move on from this coach, that might be one of the factors. And that's something that I can't answer so well. You can't answer, but I think Peter Shirelli might be able to have a sense of.
It's a question worth asking, though. Absolutely. I mean, that's the GM who pulls the trigger on the trades, but he does so thinking that the players he's moving on won't help his team as much as the guys that he's bringing in. And that's because he's seen how much they've been helping his team. And if your coach is getting less than maximum out of them, then that's going to color the equation.
So there's the other argument. Well, there's been so many coaching changes in Edmonton. And you know what? There were a lot during the Decade of Darkness. And there were a few that have been since considered to be ill-considered. Firing Tom Rennie, I think, a year too early. Firing Ralph Kruger, definitely a year too early, a huge mistake. Maybe not even sticking with Todd Nelson after things seemed to improve after he took over the team, a mistake. But, you know, so Terry Jones brought this up in a tweet to you and I when we were when you tweeted out my story that McClellan should be fired. He said, you know, how often did, you know, essentially how many times did they change coaches and how often did it help? Well, I think it did help, though, when they got rid of Dallas Eakins. He was in over his head, and I think it helped when they got rid of Pat Quinn. He was past his best before date as an NHL coach. So it can help. And even during the Decade of Darkness, some of these moves were necessary, and they did help. Now, some didn't help, and they were mistakes. But Todd McClellan hasn't been here for half a season like Ralph Kruger, or I think Rennie had, was it 2 years at the top? 2 years
Rennie got.
2 years. McClellan has, there's only three NHL coaches, Bruce, who have been in their jobs longer than Todd McClellan. Mm-hmm. John Cooper, 2013 hiring, Pete Laviolette, and Paul Maurice, 2014 hirings. And then there's a group of coaches, McClellan, Hines, Dave Hackstall, Peter DeBoer, and Mike Babcock in Toronto, who are all hired at the same time as McClellan in 2015. Mm-hmm. But every other NHL team, Bruce, has changed its coach since then. Every single team. Oh, and a lot of those teams, Columbus, New York Islanders, Buffalo, Boston, Minnesota, Calgary, Dallas, Colorado, they're ahead of Edmonton in the standings in the NHL. It's, you know, they've made that change. It's worked out for them. I just think, you know, if Peter Shirelli is going to have his day of reckoning, and I'm not arguing that he's not a big part of the issue right now, he didn't ever bring in that top puck moving defenseman. Fundamentally, that's been a huge problem and a big fail by Shirelli. He built a heavy roster when the league was going to skill, big fail. He should be fired at the end of the year if this team does not make the playoffs. But firing him now isn't going to change anything. And there is, again, this opportunity to see if some other coach can take the group of players in total between Edmonton and Bakersfield assembled by Trelly and not right off this year and see if we can get a change in a team that can make the playoffs this season.
Yeah, well, those are pretty strong arguments. You know, I mean, like it or not, it is a high turnover market. You know, you might say, well, look at college hockey or college sports, and the coaches have dynasties for 20 or 30 years, and they're, you know, and they run the programs, but it's a whole different dynamic. And the professional market, I don't know whether it's short attention spans, whether the coach loses, they get tired of his voice, what's going on, something's not clicking. But the idea is frequently that coaches get relatively short shelf life and then they get moved on. I'm sure if you looked at those other teams, you'd find a couple of them have changed coaches twice in that span.
Yeah.
And the idea was to go for all that stability. Well, like I say, here we are 3.25 years in, and the team's still struggling. And there's plenty of questions to be asked of both management and coaching.
You know what? I don't even, McClellan, if you got hired by another NHL team, I might think you've made a good hire. Like, he's not, I think he's at least, I mean, you can make an argument in the last 4 years. He's been an average to below average NHL coach. I think that you could say, you know, but if you look at the entirety of his career, he's clearly been a good coach in the past. Mm-hmm. He could be a good coach again. But there does seem to be some dynamic where maybe changing the messenger of the same message. That makes sense. The same, yeah, it did. The same messenger of the same message. Just maybe Joel Quenneville would come in and say exactly the same things as Todd McClellan. But, you know, I honestly don't buy that. I think that there are some quirks that McClellan has had in coaching this team, which, you know, let's just go with the five left shot, five right shot power play to start the year, Bruce. What was that all about? What is that all about? You know, the constant going back to McDavid and Draisaitl when it's pretty clear that for this team, that's not the answer. Some of the questions around the development of the skill players, the younger players, has been problematic. Overuse of veteran players in players where in positions where they're not having success. They haven't had success in some time. Players like Lucic on the power play, Letestu last year on the power play. Cassian on the penalty kill. Why is he still out there on the penalty kill?
Beats me on that one.
Yeah, there's enough there, along with just the record. I mean, let's face it. This is, you don't have to say anything else. You just look at the one loss record, and that's enough to say, okay, three strikes and you're out. And this is the third strike, and it's this season is salvageable. So I would make the call. That would be my decision. And you know, I know that the vast majority of fans, I think, would be satisfied if they just fired Shirelli and kept the same coach. I think that would probably be the more popular position to take. But in terms of stability, I would rather see them keep Shirelli for the rest of the year, see what happens, but bring in a new coach.
What about you? Ask one of those four-way poll questions. You know, Twitter has the four options. You could ask the four-way poll question. Should they fire the GM, fire the coach, fire neither, fire both? I'm guessing fire both might top the charts just right at the moment. Mind you, we're in a six regulation losses in seven games run, so everybody's sour at the moment. But at what point is it premature, and at what point is it overdue?
Well, which box would you tick, Bruce?
I wouldn't be sorry to see them make the move. You know,
get rid of both of them or one of them?
I see what you mean. Yeah. By the end of the season, yeah, I kind of agree with your ordering. The coach has a more immediate impact. the manager is probably not, you know, going to have less of a effect on how the team does from now until the end of the season. And the only way that he hangs on is if he, if the team does turn it around, because he made the right move and brought in the coach that got them going, being part of that reason.
Yeah, I think that if you're the manager, to me, this is an easy decision for Shirelli. Mm-hmm. He knows he has to win this year. He's got it. Yeah, the team has got to make the playoffs, and he's got to be thinking, I have put together this roster. This is my roster. This is my brainchild, and this is me. And the guy I have running that isn't getting the results I need to keep my job. I better get a new guy running that. So I think that he's going to be heavily, I would suspect, now maybe he's just got all kinds of faith in this coach to turn it around, but I don't know why he would have at this point. This is just a rerun of last season at this point, and we already saw that last year, and I don't think people are inclined to watch the same TV show again this year with the same characters. We're going to need at least a new plot, like a new plot, new coach comes in. And here's the other thing, Bruce. Joel Quenneville is on the market right now. And Daryl Cates has earned a lot of money off that new arena. And now I don't know his financial situation. Can't comment on that. But the Oilers organization has earned a lot of money off that new arena. They did not, they saved, trading Eberle. They did not spend the cap. They didn't come close to spending the cap last year. They saved a lot of money. Take some of those dollars. Protect your investment in Connor McDavid. You know, you've got to win to keep this guy happy in Edmonton. That's the real elephant in the room is McDavid's not going to stay here if they don't start winning. Let's face it. He's not going to accept being in a crap organization year after year after year. They've got to win. What better way to win, to send a message to your star player you're fully committed to winning by bringing in a coach who has managed Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews, two similar superstars to Draisaitl and McDavid, to three Stanley Cups, that probably the top coach in today's game. He is there to be had. Bruce, you got to go for it. You got to try to hire that guy and spend what it takes to get that guy. You got to spend some money to make some money here.
So he's the one, eh? Like, just if the options were, if Quenneville came to us, some people have rumored and said, no, I'm going to take the rest of the year off. I've been working my ass off for 20 years straight or whatever. They're paying me to do nothing, so I'm going to do nothing, and I'm going to make my decision in the summer. So take him off the market. Do you still move out McClellan, change for the sake of change, and either promote Gulitzin or find some other dude out on the market?
Isn't the rumor, though, that Quenneville is open to coaching right now? Isn't that what the...
I've heard both.
From insiders or from Twitter speculation?
Who knows?
It all tends to blend together after a while, doesn't it?
It sure does.
I mean, some people listen to us. They might hear us say something and think, oh, these guys are inside. Like, you know, they said it. It must be true. Like, no, we are fans. Mm-hmm. Neither of us are privy to any insider information, unless you are, Bruce, secretly. You're kind of a secretive person.
What I hear from insiders, but I'm not one myself, not a chance.
So I don't think many people take us that way. I think we're just fans. Yeah. And like we did, like, you know, in terms of us talking about firing the coach, again, this is just two fans. Like we don't have any frustrated fans. We're venting.
This weekend was hard to take, man. And I was so mad after Saturday night's game, David. It took me to 3:30 a.m. to finish writing the game grades. And that was partly because it just basically took me a whole hour just to cool down after the game was over. Just, you know, I mean, losing to Calgary on Saturday night, Hockey in Canada, experienced as we are in this
realm,
yeah.
The pain. The house of pain.
Yeah, I mean, they had managed to win a few games in a row against Calgary, but to blow a two-goal lead and not even take a point out of it, and to do so by the team falling apart in the third period and by, to my mind, poor adjustments by the coaching staff in that game in particular, that was one of the things I was really sour about.
They just fell apart. Yeah, they just completely fell apart. They had no heart. They weren't in the game in the third period. It wasn't even close. Calgary just completely, they completely outskilled them, out-hustled them, and out-coached them. And it was all three things coming together. And so you could say, yeah, there's nothing on the Oilers roster. You know, well, but that's not true. They have a lot of young, talented players. You know, they've got Dylan Dubé playing in Calgary.
Mm-hmm. They do.
How old is he? Is he 30? Well, do you have to be 34? Do you have to be Kyle Brodziak? And he didn't play in that game. Sorry, Kyle Brodziak. But do you have to be like 33, 34 to be a fourth line center or a fourth line player? Isn't he on their fourth line? Or what? He's not getting a lot of ice time, but he's a young, fast, skilled hockey player, and they're going with him. Mm-hmm. Man, the Oilers have some of these players, and they bring in a coach who's good. Like if Glenn Gulitson, here's what you do. You can't get Quenneville. You interview Viveros, Yanni, and Gulitson, and you say, okay, what's your plan? What would you do? Yeah. And you listen to them. Now, they might be hesitant to do that because it would be disloyal, but this is the real world of the NHL. And you say, okay, we're getting rid of the coach, so don't worry about loyalty. It is over. We're picking one of you three. This is a
job interview. Tell us.
This is a job interview now. The coach is gone. What is your plan, Emmanuel? What is your plan, Glenn? What is your plan, Trent? If you're the head coach and you want to get in this team in the playoffs, what are you going to do? And that actually might be, they have the insider info. A new coach coming in will have to learn a few things. Maybe he thinks Talbot is the guy to go with and not Koskinen right now, for instance. Like I have this nightmare scenario where Joel Quenneville comes in and thinks, oh, I'm going to go with that Talbot guy. So, there might be something to set for going with one of these three new guys. They're all new enough. They're all qualified to be NHL head coaches. But Chiarelli goes to them and says, okay, what would you do? And Vivera says, we have got talent up the yin-yang on that minor league team. We've got guys who can't keep up with the pace of the game. I'm putting Milan Lucic. I'm benching Cassian and Brodziak. Now I'm telling what I would do. I'm going to play a kid line on the fourth line. I'm going with Koskinen. I'm benching Jason Garrison. I'm bringing up Caleb Jones. And we're going to go for it. We're going to attack, and we're going to move that puck.
Yeah,
that's what I would say. What would you say? I'm a marginal bantam coach. And I'm in over my head as a bantam coach. Well, I am coaching two teams, so there is that.
So, yeah, you could go for the hat trick.
Yeah, I could coach three teams. Yeah, you're right. I have these commitments. I have these commitments, but I'm prepared to bend a bit and take on this. Well, anyway, so how's that? But forget my solution, Bruce. Oh, no, whether you agree with my solution or not, what about just the idea of going to these three coaches and having them present as plan B if you can't get Quenneville?
Yeah, I don't, not being an insider, I have no idea how exactly they go about those things when they hire interim coaches and so on, and how much pre-discussion takes place and so on. But the Oilers, with the three all new assistants this year, and all with varying degrees of head coaching experience in the past, it's not an open and shut case. I don't think that. I mean, obviously, I'd say Gulitson would be the first. Likeliest, but I wouldn't say it's 100% him and 0% the other two guys, right? It's not like he's got a career assistant like Billy Moores that's never going to be his head coach, right? That's going to stay where he is. You could make an argument for the other guys, and there's certainly reason to listen to them. Let's hear what they have to say. I mean, visions of the team are a big part of what it's about. And this is, you know, Chiarelli's got to be questioning his own vision at this point in terms of how it's working out. So he better be prepared to listen.
I think Chiarelli has changed course. You know, and look at they drafted Kalori Yamamoto. I mean, look at who they're drafting. You know, drafted and they brought in Pontus Aberg. Didn't work out, but he's working out on another team.
Got rid of him.
Pontus
Aberg. I mean, to me, if you're making a list of pros and cons on Todd McClellan, you can file Pontus Aberg in the cons column. I don't think he ever got a proper shot. Certainly not this fall.
Yeah. So, you know, Drake, we get endless Drake Cajula, but no Pontus Aberg. Anyway, I don't know. I don't know if anything is going to happen. Mm-hmm. It may take a few days to sort out, but that's where I'm at. Any final thoughts, Bruce?
I hear California is lovely at this time of year. Well, maybe not this year. That's where the boys are going to be all week, right? They play tomorrow. They play Friday afternoon, Thanksgiving weekend in States. So early start on Friday afternoon for folks planning your work week, 2 o'clock Mountain. And then Sunday night. So they usually go and they play 3 and 4 days out there in California and they pack them in. But this one's actually really spread out. So at least they got a little bit of time and space there and not much travel once they get to California.
Well, good. They can play Koskinen in every single game.
Well, they have that option of going with the hot goalie. There's no back-to-back. So that's one of the – you asked me about cons on McClellan's record. One to me is the overuse of Talbot over the years, and I think we're paying the price for that. We did last year and maybe ongoing. Now, maybe he just caught lightning in the bottle the one year he was lights out, but he's having trouble with his form. And this is one of the veterans over-relied on too much time on ice, right? You say the same thing about a number of the skaters.
Well, look at how he overused Klefbom earlier this year. Jeez, he just like – Klefbom was just being played to death. Well, bring up Caleb Jones, man. That guy can make a pass. Bring up Ethan Bear. Mm-hmm. He can make a pass, although apparently Bear's not playing that well right now down there. I mean, and in Shirelli's favor, like, you know, I'm okay. If they fired Shirelli tomorrow, I'm not going to be saying they made a mistake. I get it. I would get that. But on the other hand, I mean, the most reviled move of the summer by the Oilers was the signing of Mikko Koskinen. And all the same players who are screaming from Shirelli's scalp were screaming that that was a terrible decision. And they jumped the gun on it. And it's still premature to judge it. Mm-hmm. It's hard to judge this player. But it was clear. It was abundantly clear. They needed to bring in someone. And they needed to bring in someone who could challenge for the number one job. And they had to pick the right person. So, and they had to spend some money to do that. So I didn't mind at all spending the $2.5 million on a goalie who could challenge for the top job. That, you know, anyone who criticized that, I just think was dead wrong. And they needed, now, whether they picked the right guy or not was always open to question, but they needed to spend some money to bring in someone who could challenge Cam Talbot for that number one job, or at least bring in the number one person they thought. Now, maybe that was a guy who was going to be cheap, but if they thought the number one guy out there in the world who can challenge Cam Talbot is Koskinen, and this is his price, we decide to pay it, well, that was the right decision. And so far, at least, it's looking like the right decision. So we'll see if that lasts. But I've, you know, Koskinen's, every game he's been in the net in the regular season, I thought he's looked good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he'll be in next game. I have a little doubt. And for those guys that are fighting for their jobs right now, which would be the coach, in my opinion, at this point, I mean, he's on the hot seat at minimum. You got to go with your best. And right now, when it comes to between the pipes for the Oilers, that's no contest. You know, in the last 10-game segment, Koskinen had a .922 save percentage in 5 starts. And Talbot had .845 in 5 starts.
Oh, God. Wow. Like,
0-5-0. You know.
Jeepers creepers. That is not good, Bruce.
No,
and what a gap. It's almost like a full 100% points.
Yeah, 75 points.
Yeah, wow. Whew.
Anyway, is that on the coach, or is it just playing the cards that he's dealt and some of them aren't performing, or what? I will say that the team, the core players as a group, the main three defensemen, the main three forwards, and the number one goalie cratered in their performance from the first 10 games to the second 10. And
they all played about what? How many minutes a game were they playing?
20, they're all over 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And their game grades, all of them dropped by like 1.5 to 2 points per game average from the first 10 to the second 10, except only Draisaitl who managed to keep going.
You got all these slow fourth line players and third line D-men who are too slow to play. You're not, you know. Like, I really hope whoever coaches next brings up the rookies and brings a younger look to this team. I mean, look at Patrick Russell. He played decent hockey. He's a hungry young player who can skate a bit. I mean, I don't think he's the answer, but they have some players. They have some depth. Why aren't they using it? Like, why are they going to these guys? Why, you know, how many games does Kyle Brodziak have to play before we realize, like, he can't play anymore? Like, sorry.
Well,
I would spot him in games now and then. But mm-hmm. And Cassian, how much do we have to see Zach Cassian play before we realize, like, it's over, man? We're going to send you to the minors. We're going to put you in the press box and spot. You're going to play about 15 games the rest of the year when we need someone, when we're playing a big, tough team and we need you. Yeah. So.
And so, I mean, to some extent, I have some sympathy for the coach there because, you know, it's not his doing in terms of the depth of the roster. He has to deal the hand that he's dealt with. And if you've got a lot of deuces and trays, you know, you're in deep. Now, I'd say they have a lot of cards with numbers on them. They're not necessarily low numbers, but they haven't got very many aces and kings. And there's a big gap.
Well, you have to keep Cassian. Well, if you send Cassian to the minors, it's eating your salary cap, but they have cap room to eat. But you can send Brodziak and Garrison to the minors and call up a player, and there's no cap hit or marginal. So,
you probably come out ahead.
Yeah. So that's not an excuse for the coach because he's picking these players as much as anybody. Unless he's being ordered, like you have to have Jason Garrison in your lineup. You can't have Caleb Jones. Whose decision is that? I think that's the coach's decision.
We don't want those rookie mistakes, David. That's why Cooper Marody's playing 3 minutes.
I like what John Tortorella said.
Harvey and Kyle Yamamoto are in the minors. That's why Evan Bouchard is back in junior. I mean, veterans are the choice. And if you don't like a coach who likes veterans, then chances are you don't like Todd McClellan.
Okay, let's leave it there, Bruce. Thanks for talking.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.